The hospitality industry jumps swiftly into Cuba. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. President Obama is in Cuba now, ahead of a meeting with President Raul Castro later today. It's about diplomacy, human rights, and trade relations. The Obama administration has been encouraging U.S. corporations to look at new business there. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer is here. Morning, Nancy.
Good morning.
So who's taking the plunge into Cuba?
Well, Starwood Hotels announced what it's calling a groundbreaking expansion to Cuba over the weekend. It says it signed deals to operate three of Cuba's famous hotels. One will be a Four Points by Sheraton, and the other two will be part of Starwood's luxury brand.
All right. And there's news that Airbnb is also up and at it in Cuba.
Yeah, Airbnb says starting this week, its hosts in Cuba will list about 4,000 of their homes on the website. The Cuban government started allowing Cubans to rent rooms in their homes back in the 90s, but it's really hard to guarantee a booking or pay by credit card, and Airbnb says it'll solve those problems.
But isn't there still a U.S. embargo against Cuba?
Well, there is that, David. The Obama administration has been sort of chipping away at the embargo. Starwood and Airbnb say they got special authorization from the U.S. Treasury Department to operate in Cuba. Airbnb says this is an expansion of a previous authorization that allowed it to just rent to American travelers in Cuba. But ultimately, only Congress can lift the U.S. trade embargo, and it's showing absolutely no interest in doing that.
Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer, thank you. Separately, that hotel chain Starwood is fickle in its affections. 4 days ago, they were merging with Marriott until accepting a higher bid from a Chinese insurance company called Anbang, prompting headlines about the biggest purchase of a U.S. real estate by a Chinese company ever. But there is news this morning that Marriott came back with a higher offer worth $13.6 billion, which Starwood has now accepted. We'll see who actually shows up at the altar on wedding day. There's new information about America's housing market in just a few minutes. This is used housing stock, not new construction. As of January, sales were up 11% in a year. Karen Cavanaugh is market strategist with Voya Investment Management.
Housing has been the bright spot in the last year. We've definitely seen consumer and housing move forward. They came in very good. Existing home sales we expect will be also good. And that's good news for a continued strong consumer because usually house is their number one asset. So when a consumer's house is worth more, they're out there spending more, and that's good for the U.S. economy.
And don't say the following merger story is like listening to paint dry. Sherwin-Williams is buying rival Valspar for $9.3 billion. Valspar is a big paint brand at Lowe's, the big box hardware store with all that real estate turnover and apartments opening up. They all need a lot of paint. There's a growing body of evidence that hospital mergers can lead to higher prices. In other words, insurers, employers, and patients could pay more for things like C-sections, MRIs, and hip replacements the bigger hospitals get. Today we have an exclusive look at some useful new research on hospital mergers. Here's Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein at our health desk at WHYY.
For more than 40 years, a handful of economists, antitrust lawyers, and health policy wonks have worried hospitals that merge but operate in entirely different markets, so-called cross-market mergers, drive up prices. But for decades, the evidence, as it were, has been more anecdotal. This new paper from Northwestern's Limor Daphne and her co-authors provides definitive proof that when hospitals make these sorts of deals, they tend to hurt employers and consumers.
If you're doing it because you think in the long run it's going to serve your community well, you should think twice.
The study looked at the more than 500 mergers between 2000 and 2012 and focused on deals that involve hospital consolidation in the same state but different local markets.
We found price increases of 6 to 10% on average for those transactions.
6 to 10% is the sort of increase that typically gets antitrust officials worried. As of right now, though, cross-market mergers aren't scrutinized. This isn't because regulators are asleep at the switch. It's because, in part, they've lacked the empirical evidence to challenge these sorts of mergers. Massachusetts Assistant Attorney General Karen Sung, who runs the health division, says this new information will likely expand her work.
It's leading edge. It helps attorney general's offices refine our thinking and our analytics that drive our monitoring of the healthcare market on behalf of consumers.
Part of this work is designed to arm attorneys general and the FTC with a framework and data to challenge these different mergers. Already, at least three AG offices have asked for the report. But Greg Visnes, an economist with Charles River Associates, worries regulators will get ahead of themselves and go after deals that may be perfectly reasonable.
These cross-market mergers, I can give you a good sense about why, in general, they might be bad. But I don't think we're at the point yet where I can say, this one's good, this one's bad.
Even if regulators are slow to respond, Daphne hopes this information makes its way to hospital C-suites, where she says executives and board members may not fully realize what these deals do.
So I don't want to paint them as, you know, these evildoers who are conspiring against everyone. I think when you see the insurance industry consolidating, when you see reductions in payments, you panic and you reinforce your current position, and a merger is a way to do that.
In a statement, the American Hospital Association said mergers provide patients with access to care and they are not a meaningful predictor of price change. I'm Dan Gorenstein for Marketplace.
And at a time when smartphones are approaching the size of a stuffed standard business envelope, Apple's expected to launch a smaller, cheaper iPhone today, at least compared to the iPhone 6. The new one, called the SE, should be about 4 inches tall, pretty close to the old 5, but with the chip inside for Apple Pay. That's where you wave the thing like a magic wand that drains money away. Pocketable and cheaper is always nice, and this could do well in Africa, the Middle East, and South Asia. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.